Grab a cup of tea or a glass of wine and tune in for Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy on Tuesdays at 2 p.m. Eastern. Linda creates sacred space for leading female luminaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. A soulful venue where guests openly share the fears and obstacles they've overcome, wisdom and lessons learned, and the personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic, soulful living.
Welcome to Inspired Conversations. I'm so glad that you chose to join me today for what's sure to be an inspiring conversation. I'm host Linda Joy, publisher of the beloved Aspire magazine, the premier inspirational magazine for women since 2006. I'm also the best-selling publisher at the boutique publishing house, inspiredlivingpublishing.com, where we publish stories and books to inspire women to live their best life. Joining me today is Dr. Mani Foyerman, author of Ghosted and Breadcrumbed, Stop Falling for Unavailable Men and Get Smart About Healthy Relationships. She offers insightful advice for those who find themselves in a painful and unsatisfying relationship. And I think we can all raise our hand and say we've been there at one time or another. In a recent book, she explains why we accept poor treatment in relationships. And in today's conversation, Dr. Mani expands on how we can change these patterns and invite in a nourishing and loving relationship. Dr. Mani is a licensed social worker and marriage and family therapist with a private practice counseling those with relationship issues. She also trains therapists to do couples therapy and writes about love relationships for a number of media outlets. Welcome, Dr. Mani.
Thank you. It is a pleasure to be here and talk to you about my book and everything that you just said.
Well, the thing is, I think every woman can relate to this whole conversation, right? We've all been in an unhealthy relationship in one way or another at some time in our lives. But for some women, it becomes a pattern. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But I think we should start with, to understand unhealthy relationship, let's talk about a healthy relationship. What are some of the building blocks of a healthy relationship?
I think the core of a healthy relationship is feeling safe and secure, feeling that you can rely and count on somebody. So if you can say, you know, this person has my back, I know they'll be there for me, they won't let me down in a time of need, that is probably the biggest piece, that there's a lot of trust between two people. They have shared values. They have goals that are complementary, that are going in the right direction. It doesn't mean that two people won't argue at times or fight, or, you know, because that's pretty much impossible to not sometimes get in disagreements. But they figure out a way to really resolve them for good, so that they don't come up over and over. And there's a lot of room and space for each person's perspective to bring into the relationship, and that your value just as a person, that you're different, so that there's room for both people in that regard, and that that people are honest with each other. There's a lot of transparency. People act ethically, which may sound funny, but ethically even towards each other, and they just really have a strong bond, that they can say that we really have a strong, secure, and safe bond with each other. And when it's a romantic relationship, there's also the romantic piece to it. So there's love, there's also physical intimacy, and we can kind of, you know, add on to that, all of that stuff that's not necessarily in a platonic relationship. And so that can also make things a little tricky at times, but that there's avenues to repair when things fall off track.
So is this something that we learn from our parental relationship? So I've always wondered, right, because you have friends that you grow up in life and it's like, oh, their parents have the perfect relationship, but they grow up and they have unhealthy relationship patterns, and then the same vice versa. What's your thoughts on that, about how we're raised or what we witness as our core relationship?
That is a huge component. You have to look at your family system and the very first relationship that we really have, which is with a caregiver, often a mother and a father, a person that takes care of us, that meets our needs. We're born helpless, right? We wouldn't survive. We wouldn't thrive without somebody doing that for us. And the quality of that care is can vary on a continuum. It could be really good, and it could be really poor. It could even be abusive. It can be neglectful. So we have a whole continuum of how this influences us, and then it creates a blueprint, in a way, a template for how we see others and how we come to believe that we can count and rely on other people. Also, how we see ourselves. We know that what is told to us very early on, we tend to believe it. We take that as truth. So if a parent is building you up and saying, hey, you're wonderful and you can do anything you put your mind to, is a very different message than, you know, being told you're wrong all the time or you're bad or expressing an emotion, a certain emotion isn't good. So all of these different moving parts influence us, and then they create attachment patterns and attachment styles. And I just want to say something broad about attachment theory, because attachment theory is one of the most profound theories we have in psychology. It's well proven. And some of what I was just talking about, those patterns that develop early, we know that it happens with children and parents, and we probably hear a lot about that, or you've probably heard a lot about that. You know, there's books about attachment parenting and how to be responsive to your child and take care of them, and we really look to foster that in between a parent and a child. And so what they didn't know right off the bat was that those patterns that get established in childhood do get carried out later in life. And it is particularly re-triggered and reactivated in adult romantic relationships. So if you had a secure, what we call a secure attachment, which means that you had a very safe and secure bond with somebody, there was someone consistent and reliable in those early years, you had a sense of safety, you will tend to thrive in your adult relationships as well, particularly your romantic relationships, because you have a mindset that close, intimate relationships are good, and they feel good, and you know how to ask for your needs to be met, and you're not afraid to take risks when it comes to love. But if you have not formed the secure attachment because maybe the care was inconsistent, it was unreliable or neglectful, maybe there was a lack of safety altogether or some kind of abuse, you might develop a insecure attachment style, and there's a few of them. But the bottom line, what underlies the insecure styles is that there's a lot of fear, and there's a lot of mixed feelings about love and intimacy because it wasn't always safe for you. And so that defines your view of love and counting on other people. So it really makes sense that later on, that's what you anticipate in others. That's what you might think you deserve. It definitely influences your choices. And then sometimes we'll repeat what feels comfortable or familiar. So we might even intellectually know that it isn't healthy or it's dysfunctional, it's not good for us. But we will repeat it because there's familiarity. We know what to expect. And so this gets buried in what's called our implicit memory, or what we also commonly know as our unconscious mind. So that could be running the show. And so how much that impacted you, those early experiences, can go from being really healthy and good to really unhealthy, and it doesn't feel so good. It can even be traumatic for some people.
So we gravitate towards what was comfortable for us growing up, whether that's good or bad. It's what we knew. So
exactly.
It's our norm.
Right. It's what's normal for you.
Years.
Yes.
And so we're going to take a break, but when we come back, I want to talk more about that because I think it really sets the whole, sets us up for really understanding why we're attracted, you know, maybe to emotionally unavailable men or other relationship, I don't want to call it containers, that we may find ourselves in. Because mine evolved over the years. I'm blessed now that I have a beautiful, healthy relationship over the last 2 decades. But I can relate to all those years that I didn't. And I love hearing the reasons why, you know. So I'm excited and inspired to continue our conversation.
Sounds great.
And I'll be back in a moment with Dr. Marnie Feuerman. You can learn more at drmarnieonline.com.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Inspiration for a woman's soul. Aspire Magazine, inspiring and supporting women on the path of self-discovery. Claim your free digital subscription today, which includes access to thousands of dollars of personal development bonus gifts from Team Inspiration Partners. Claim your Aspire Magazine subscription today at subscribetoaspire.com.
Are you trying to get from point A to point B and need a little advice? Connect with the counselors at OM Times Advisors. Whether you're looking for a life coach or a spiritual intuitive, the advisors participating at advisors.omtimes.com were carefully chosen based on their gifts, skills, and professionalism. OM Times Advisors, connecting you with the best advisors in the business.
Do you have time to read that inspiring book? Or that blog post you've been meaning to get to? In your busy world, how do you improve yourself and keep your life going? I'm Lisa Kay, and my Between Heaven and Earth radio show can transform your life just by listening. Be uplifted with inspiring topics, positive stories, and ideas that really work. Between Heaven and Earth radio is conscious living for your soul, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time.
Hey, America, we need to have a little talk. We've got more food than we know what to do with in this country, yet 17 million kids in America are struggling with hunger. Makes no sense. Luckily, the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks has volunteers gathering excess food and getting it to hungry kids. They're kind of like food angels. Hey, become a food angel yourself by supporting Feeding America in your local food bank at feedingamerica.org. We can't do it without your help. Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
This is OTR-FM, part of the IOM Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Inspired Conversations. I'm your host, Linda Joy. And with me today is Dr. Marnie Feuerman of Dr. Marnie Online. And we're talking about healthy relationships and how our early years might set the tone for the relationships we find ourselves choosing. Those lessons that we learned in our early years. So do you believe it's possible that some individuals are wired so differently? Because how do you have two siblings in a family? This is the stuff that always amazes me, who had the same parents, but they grew up and followed two different paths when it comes to relationships. And it's almost like they had a different lens.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen
yes.
that in your work?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think we're, and I know this may be a very broad way of answering it, but, you know, we always talk about this nature-nurture debate, and we also know, you know, parents have a different fit with their kids and a different fit with their personality. And so you could have two different kids, and one you find very easy, you know, doesn't battle you when you say no or try to redirect them or discipline. You have another one that might be very rebellious and has a very tough or rigid personality. And so these things can come together. And so two people can have a very different experience. I think also just in the way we socialize kids too, we socialize girls quite different than we socialize boys. And I think that has become part of the problem. We now have the whole concept of toxic masculinity. And, you know, I think that comes from the messages that we send our girls and our boys. And so girls, we praise them and we validate them for emotional expression and valuing the relationship over competition and things like that. And we don't send those same messages to boys. And we make them maybe feel bad about emotional expression. And that stuff gets, you know, squashed down, has no place to go. So their understanding of maybe how to express themselves and get their needs met, it becomes very different, I think, in boys and girls. So that's one, you know, that's also an element of it. So I think there's a lot of different factors that can influence your perception of the relationship, both that you've had towards your parents and also the view of your parents' relationship and maybe how, you know, how resilient you might have been as well. So if some negative things happened to you growing up, you could have one sibling that just completely falls apart at the seams, and you can have another one that is very strong and resilient and found other positive coping strategies to deal with the stress. And so I think the perceptions come from those types of things.
I've always been so interested in that. So you touched a little bit about, you know, that boys aren't raised to show emotion. Is that one of the reasons why there's so many emotionally unavailable men? You know, I hear it from my girlfriends, like, there's, hello, I'm knocking, but no one's there. They can't connect. And this, the majority of us, we need that connection.
Yes, and women place a high value on it. I think if we even look at the data, you know, we know that women live longer than men, and that has a lot to do with the fact that they can express their emotions and they can ask for their needs to be met relatively easily, including from friends and lots of different people. And and when if I look at who comes into my office and who makes the calls for the sessions and things like that, it's usually women. And also the divorce rate, I think it's something like 2/3 of the divorces are filed by women. So they're the ones choosing to end these marriages. And one of the complaints that I hear a lot is that they're not feeling emotionally connected with their partners. And I think they can, let's say, by their time, they're very occupied, maybe the kids are in the house, and then once the kids leave, things just fall apart. So, I also have some men who express their love and, you know, in different ways. They might be more demonstrative, it might be more physical, it might be things like doing tasks, and they feel like that is the way that they're expressing it, and sometimes it's not, it's sort of lost on the women at times, and they're expecting the husbands to come to them and just have conversations with more depth. They don't want them to avoid the we need to talk topics. And so a piece of it is that I think sometimes men just really struggle to both know what they're feeling and express it and also show vulnerability. And they think they're going to be seen negatively or wimpy or in some type of way in their spouse's eyes, and often that's what the women are really begging for. They're desperate for that, and they really want that, and it makes them feel good, it makes them feel safe, it makes them feel connected. So I do think men tend to struggle with it more, and certainly a piece of it is also the attachment style too. And you know, if men are socialized a certain way, plus they, let's say, don't have such great experiences growing up, They're getting a lot that's impacting their ability to really show up and be emotionally connected in a relationship.
And I know what you just mentioned a moment ago, so many women, that's what they yearn for. For me, it's always been, especially as I age, I'll be 57, it's emotional and spiritual connection, even above physical, if I had to give something up, because I just live so deeply. And of course, I don't want to give up all three, but I'm saying that's how important it is to me. And I refused to settle, so I took 2 years off, 2.5. I'm like, I'm not dating, I'm not anything. I got to figure out why I was attracting the men I was attracting in my 20s, 30s, and early 40s. I finally
I had the same issue.
Just
yeah, yes, I had some of the same struggles, and I had to connect the dots as well and figure this out. Developing that self-awareness is the biggest piece in this, so that you can, you realize and you know, and you can then start making changes as to, you know, what am I doing? What is this coming from? You know, just because it's familiar doesn't mean I have to choose or accept this. And it doesn't mean that it's necessarily love either, because there's a lot of chemistry with these people when it's very familiar, reflects a lot of our childhood stuff. And if you had a good childhood, then great. You know, that's wonderful. But if it wasn't so good, or you had a lot of problems and a lot of things happen to you, a lot of negative experiences, you're going to attract a similar type of dynamic, and you're going to feel some type of chemistry, and then you're defining it as love, or you think this must be right. And so we want to get the other part of our brains online here that uses better judgment and is more rational and then makes better decisions. That, yeah, I might feel this chemistry for this person, but this isn't right for me, or it's not right long term. And it's definitely not right if I want to commit to someone long term and maybe even have a family with them. So these are things that are incredibly important to have that self-awareness and realize what things are running in the background that we need to be more conscious and aware of.
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I took that 22 months off, it was the scariest thing I ever did. No dating, completely celibate. Mm-hmm. And it was, I remember going, I've been with someone since I was 15 years old. I'd always been in long-term relationships. Yes, they were good in many ways, but some, looking back, I go, And it was doing the, being willing to do the inner work. Is that what you notice with the clients that come to you? They're like, I'm ready. I got to figure this out because I keep repeating the same pattern.
Yes, and it's a very interesting process to see it unfold when people start to make these connections and make different choices. You know, it just creates such a positive energy in them as well, because then they feel empowered, whereas they're feeling very victimized when they first, you know, start this process. And people often at the time they come in, it's like they are fed up. They are sick of it. And they're getting really worried and concerned because they're also realizing, you know, I have certain dreams in my life. You know, I want to find that one partner to have the rest of my life. And as time goes on, they're feeling more and more victimized and demoralized by the men or the people they're attracting. I mean, sometimes it's definitely the other way around too, where it's men attracting certain types of women. So I see it both ways. And certainly gay and lesbian relationships. I mean, this happens. It doesn't matter, you know, even what you're, you know, anything about that. It's just that it's these early patterns that we keep repeating. And so when people start to get that and develop more self-awareness about that, it just opens a whole new world for them, and then they can make such better choices, and then they're feeling so much better about themselves as well.
One of the things I noticed is doing that inner work, which I thought was just about healing my relationship issues, actually created a beautiful ripple effect on every area of my life. I became an entrepreneur. I found my self-confidence, my self-esteem. Have you noticed the same ripple effect when they start diving deep into their stories?
Oh, absolutely, because they're going to choose someone who supports them, who supports their efforts and their goals, and brings them up, brings out the best in them, because that's one of the things I even found for myself is someone would bring out the worst in me, You know, maybe even I was bringing out the worst in them too. So I think if you are finding the right person that really makes you feel that sense of security and safety, and you can count on them, it brings out the best in you. Because the other piece in attachment that we refer to as a secure base and a safe haven. So they're the person that we're with, that we count on, but it also gives us the strength to be apart from them and to thrive in the world, because we have a mental representation of that relationship in our heads in everything we do. If we know we have a partner at home who has our back and is there for us, and we can reach out if we're struggling, that makes us feel that we can thrive in all areas of our life. So yes, I absolutely see just what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I've been with Dana 25 years, and I remember him saying when we first met, he said, "You don't even see what I see. You still see yourself in a cocoon." He goes, "And I see the butterfly that you are." And I remember looking at him after 20 years of adult relationships, going, "Where the hell did you come from?" Right? And he talks like that.
Right. And we don't believe it at first, especially if we're not used to that. You know, we're not used to having it go so well and easy and pleasant. And,
yeah.
You know, and that's an interesting piece of that, too.
Yeah, and I remember looking at him, and my soul was so happy, right, to hear words like that, because that's what I had been yearning for. But there was that other part of me like, what? Like, just speak like that. And so that, what you just said, that when you have a partner that loves and supports you, that's what causes the ripple effect, because you're so loved and supported. We're going to talk about that more when we come back from our next break. And I want to, when we come back, talk about why we get so stuck in these relationships with emotionally unavailable men. We'll be talking about all that and more after our break.
Free your mind. Expand your soul. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
The world is shifting. The divine feminine is rising. Women are being called to live, lead, and serve in full alignment with their feminine essence. Introducing Marcia Mariner. Marcia is a divine feminine visionary leader, licensed therapist, hypnotherapist, and carrier of the Sacred Feminine Wealth Codes. Marcia supports consciously evolving women to break free from their conditioned self, embrace their feminine gifts, and wake up to their sacred worth. By fully embodying their own beauty and magnificence, Marcia believes women have the power to collectively shift the evolution of the world. Through virtual and live sacred circles and supportive programs, Marcia serves awakening women by helping them discover their unique soul codes so they can say yes to fully embodying their sacred worth. Begin your transformational journey by visiting marciamariner.com.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Hi everyone, this is Shay Parker, the host of Best of the Best, which airs live right here on IOM Radio every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. I'm super excited to bring you expert guest hosts, spiritual discussions, free psychic readings, and so much more. I can promise that you will not want to miss this one-of-a-kind, fun, yet touching, down-to-earth show. Join us every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Pacific on OTRFM. This is Shay Parker, and I can't wait to see you there.
The number one reason girls drop out of school in sub-Saharan Africa is lack of access to feminine hygiene products. The Pads for Schoolgirls project, an outreach of Humanity Healing International, is changing this paradigm by setting up sewing programs at schools, teaching girls a vocational skill, while producing the reusable pads that help keep them attending classes. The girls pay it forward by making and giving pad kits to other girls in need. To learn more, visit humanityhealing.org. Humanity Healing is where your heart is. A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Hi, you're listening to Inspire Conversations. I'm your host, Linda Joy. With me today is Dr. Marnie Feuerman of drmarnieonline.com. All right, Marnie, come on. Why do we get stuck in relationships with these men that can't be there for us? Even if they want to be, they just can't.
If we're getting stuck, again, it goes back to the early history. You're looking at your family and those dynamics, and also your, in particular, your parents. And if you had a parent that was unavailable, or checked out, or had an addiction, or something like that, there's a huge pull to reconcile that. Like, I'm going to fix it now. I'm going to get what I didn't get. It's like a hole or a wound we keep trying to fill. Then there's that other piece about the way women are socialized. So we are more nurturing, and we could be very maternal. I think our instincts are to be helpful, to be sympathetic. And when we see a man struggling in this way, maybe he's struggling with his emotions, or he even has a lot of problems and issues and things like that, I think we can over-function pretty easily. We can get stuck in, just where we're getting the energy. It's just very out of balance. So we're getting sucked dry of a lot of our energy in order to keep the person afloat, the relationship afloat. And so we can get really trapped and stuck in that. And then the more somebody struggles, so if you have a man and he's really struggling with this, and you feel this pull to help, then the more they pull away, your need to help actually increases. So it's a very tricky dynamic that I see a lot, that you can get easily stuck in. And if you're really trying for that closeness and connection, the more you escalate your demands for it, so the more you seek it, it may actually be scaring your partner, and so they're pulling away more as well. And then we just want to, figure this out and help this person, and we stay in so long, and then we're thinking more about their needs, and we're not thinking about our own or what's right for us. And I think we know that there's, this happens in a lot of different areas. Like even as a mother, like the mother guilt. It's like we can feel almost guilty as well in these kinds of relationships. And then before long, you're just in a dynamic that becomes really entrenched. And you may not be sure how to, how to get out of it at that point, or even that it's going on.
Yeah, you might not recognize it because it's such an organic part of your way of processing.
Yes, exactly. Sometimes people even get into like a denial about it. So your friends and family and the other people that love and care about you may see it, may even try to point it out. And I think that's hard for us to listen to and take in, but that's one of the best clues that you're not in a good relationship, because other people usually see it first. They're not caught up in the feelings of love and the chemistry, so they're seeing things much more clearly. And so I think if we can be less defensive about taking that in, we're probably going to make better choices as well, if we can really listen to people that have had our back all along.
So true, because as you said that, I'm thinking back to my 20s, and I remember the family going, maybe this isn't really healthy. And I remember defending it and getting getting my dithers up. But looking back, I'm like, they would come into me with love and concern because they were seeing red flags that I couldn't see because I was so entrenched in the story, in the attachment to that
yes,
story.
Yes, and that's one of the things I talk about in the book as well, because that is another way to develop the self-awareness and to break the blocks and the patterns that come up. It's other people can help with the feedback, but we have to be open to taking it in and not just immediately kick it back or say, or join with the partner even more, which tends to happen, right? We want to defend that person. But, to just listen with an open heart to people, you're more likely to then figure this out.
Yeah, I can see back then I was so defensive. So, of course, I closed the doors, and that made me feel more isolated. So, of course, I grabbed onto that unhealthy relationship even more, as you just shared.
Yes, and I think we've all had that experience as well.
Especially in your 20s, you know, you're still defining
yes.
yourself. But if we don't do the inner work, those patterns will follow us into our 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond.
Yes.
Are you finding more and more women come to you for marriage and family therapy than men? Are like a woman more open to healing their relationships than men are, or is that shifting now?
Overall, yes, more women, but I am seeing a bit of a shift, so I'm very optimistic about that. I think men are becoming more open to therapy. I have several men that I'm seeing for, you know, individual therapy, and they're working on some of these similar types of concerns that we're talking about. They're struggling with dating and relationships. So I think the tide is turning, and I think we've had to do a lot as a community, as a society, to destigmatize mental health and mental health treatment. And I think that's the results of that, I think, are starting to show. So more and more men are showing up for treatment, or they're not as afraid to come in with a wife. What happens, or, you know, again, hopefully it's going to continue to shift. But if it's a marital issue, I get the calls from the men often when the spouse has put divorce on the table. So the spouse is considering divorce. And then in a panic, I get a call from the husband. And then when I see them, when they come in, the wife will say something like, you know, I've been trying to get him to come to therapy for years. And now he's willing to do it because I threatened divorce. So it just makes yeah. things harder to come back from. But I do think that things are shifting in a positive direction with that, and I certainly hope it stays that way.
Yeah, and I think it's generational, too. I see more. I have a grandson now that's 19, very open, can talk about his feelings. I love that compared to the 19-year-olds I knew when I was 19 years old, right? So I'd like to say that, I'd like to believe that the younger generations coming up are more allowing themselves to be more emotionally connected and vulnerable.
They absolutely
are. I'm not sure if that's across the board, but I'm seeing it. Even in my, I have a large family. I have a lot of nieces around that same age. I'm even seeing it in them. I'm like, man, they're so much more emotionally aware than I ever was at that age.
Yeah, they are, and millennials as well. They're very open to therapy and premarital counseling and much more than past generations. So I am seeing a shift with that too, and it's great.
And that gives us hope, doesn't it?
Yes, definitely.
I'm like, yay, you know.
We're especially going to need it, you know, with all this, the internet and online stuff. And, you know, like
oh,
I think
yeah.
the face-to-face communication can get a little tricky for the, you know, the younger sets. But I, hopefully, you know, they're open to making these changes and doing some psychological exploration, hopefully things will change there.
That's what I'm hoping for, too. It just gives us hope. I have a 7-year-old granddaughter, too. So everything that I do in my life is based on let's make the world a better place, you know.
Yes.
So they have a chance, right? So sharing conversations like this or through my magazine or the books I publish, it's all let's just spread the information that's needed to elevate the world, elevate the vibration of who we are, because I know we're all better than this, right? Better than
mm-hmm.
where the world is at this moment. So
yeah, we have a lot of good information and science behind some of these things that we're talking about. And so, you know, we're not just kind of throwing out ideas that aren't proven. So all those things are on the right track for sure.
Yeah, I love that. I love because for those who need that science-based, the work that you do is based on that. So
yeah.
they're like, oh, okay, I can grab on to that. And they can hold on
yeah.
to it even though they might not understand it.
And it's changing all the time because we, you know, we do have people then doing more research and getting more information and better information. So we can always update it. But we definitely have a lot of really good information, even about things like love and relationships and stuff that, you know, I think a long time ago would have been fluff. They would have said, this is meaningless. Why study this? In fact, I've heard researchers complain about not having enough funding for this kind of research, yet we know solid relationships are the bedrock of society, you know, and the bedrock of family systems. So we desperately need it, and I think things are starting to change in that area where we're starting to value it. We're not just seeing love as a fluff or extra. We're seeing it as important.
As a core part of our being, of our existence.
Yeah.
Not like you said, like woo or fluff. It's the essence of the building blocks that make society, because it all begins at home.
Yes.
Well, what we're going to do, Dr. Bonnie, we're going to take our last break and we come back. I want to talk about attachment. You dove into it a little bit, but how you define it and why it's so important in romantic relationships. And I'll be back in a moment with Dr. Mani Feuerman of DrManiOnline.com. Be sure to visit her site, learn more about her new book, Ghosted in Breadcrumbs, Stop Falling for Unavailable Men and Get Smart About Healthy Relationships. We'll be back in a moment.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
We can all use a little more peace and joy in our lives. Don't you agree? Counselor, best-selling author, and self-nurturing expert Kelly Grimes of CultivatingPeaceAndJoy.com is passionate about empowering overwhelmed and exhausted women to live with more peace, joy, and meaning through the practice of self-nurturing. Through her experience working with individuals, speaking, providing workshops, and teaching professional and leadership development to forward-thinking organizations, Kelly knows that nurturing peace in the world begins from the inside out. That's why she created the free Cultivating Peace and Joy mobile app that brings you beautiful self-nurturing reminders, guided meditations, empowering practice tools, and daily prompts with an inspiring question to guide your daily self-nurturing practice. Download your free Cultivating Peace and Joy mobile app today at CultivatingPeaceAndJoy.com.
Are you trying to get from point A to point B and need a little advice? Connect with the counselors at Om Times Advisors. Whether you're looking for a life coach or a spiritual intuitive, the advisors participating at advisors.omtimes.com were carefully chosen based on their gifts, skills, and professionalism. Om Times Advisors, connecting you with the best advisors in the business.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on Om Times Radio every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
Me, a cat, moving in with a new human. It took a little getting used to. She has these weird games she likes to play, like this giant feather. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. She sticks it in my face. I swat it away. It's almost like she thinks I enjoy it. But seeing how much fun she gets out of it, well, I guess it makes it all worth it. Humans.
A person is the best thing to happen to a shelter pet. Be that person. Adopt. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org.
A conscious lifestyle for a mindful life. Om Times Radio. IOM FM.
Welcome back. You're listening to Inspired Conversations. I'm your host, Linda Joy. With me today is Dr. Mani Feuerman. Mani, so right before the break, we were talking about attachment. So how do you define attachment, and why is it so important in romantic relationships?
Well, attachment is just about how we interact and behave in relationships. Like I said before, in childhood, those styles are centered around how the child and parent interacts. And then we develop these styles later on in romantic relationships. And we know that there's styles that have us where we feel secure or we don't feel secure. And when we don't feel secure, we have a lot of anxiety when we don't have our attachment figure, the first figure, let's say, being the parent or the mother. And so when we don't have our partners right there for us, or we know that we can reach them if we need them. We also experience that separation distress, believe it or not. It just looks a little different in an adult than it does as a child. The tantrums look a little bit different, but it's the same core emotion where we feel maybe anxiety and fear around that. And so attachment was critical for our survival even as a species. And so being that the biggest component of attachment is that strong emotional bond and that emotional connection, we need that as well if we're going to continue to survive as a species. So if we didn't feel a strong emotional bond or connection, we're not going to link up with people long term. So we're not going to perpetuate the species. So we want to have this really secure emotional connection with somebody, and that comes from really sharing on a deeper emotional level, that there's depth to the conversation. You're not just talking about superficial content, that you're going deeper, that you can share the stuff that's hard to share, maybe our fears, our vulnerabilities, the things that, you know, how we our sense of worthiness, our sense of even being lovable. So if we have someone that we can express that to and they can respond and validate and remind us that we are lovable and that they care for us, that we have a special person in our lives that's able to show us that, again, that's how we really thrive. It develops attachment, develops those expectations that we have. And so if your expectation is based on a parent that is has been neglectful or has been absent or checked out, we're going to think that that's the way partners should be. Oh, well, that's what love is. And so we want to redefine it and recognize that, no, that isn't what love is, and that we're not going to do really well if we don't have a consistent, caring bond with another person.
I feel it's so key. It's key to everything, then. It's key to being happy in our relationships, having a healthy relationship, but also, as you said, perpetuating our species.
Yes. Like, people don't realize, again, it's not fluff, that this is evolutionary. This is how we survived as a species, because we did form these early attachments.
So that's why we hear so much now, and I think it's a topic for another conversation, but I'll just bring it up briefly, that these children growing up with social media and technology who are using it to communicate instead of emotionally connect with their peers, that's a whole story in itself that can lead to us not feeling attached or have empathy for others. Have you found that
too? Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. I watch and I'm like, oh my God, I'll share one quick story. Many years ago, it was my grandson. He was in the back of the truck. They were 9 years old with their phones, him and three friends. We had a great day. I'm like, oh, it's so quiet back there. So I said something and I go, what are you guys doing? He goes, we're talking. I go, what do you mean you're talking? He goes, I'm texting him. I go, he's sitting right next to you. That's what they were doing, right?
Wow.
And I was so shocked, right? And they go, but we text each other instead. I'm like, I'm noticing it more and more with that generation, is they don't have the eye-to-eye contact. They don't get the cues, the social cues, because everything is technology.
Right, and the nonverbal is crucial, because that's someone's truth. You know, even if I'm, let's say, in a session with somebody, and they're telling me a story, and they might be saying it very kind of flat and matter of fact, but I see their eyes tearing up. Well, the eyes tearing up, that's the truth. That's the sadness, and that's the unspoken piece that I want to laser focus in on, because that's the stuff that really gets buried. Their true emotional experiences. So sometimes people don't even know that they're there or what they are, or that they can make sense of them, that they can have this coherent picture of what were the influences in their earlier life, and how is it impacting their current relational life? So that's why it is super important.
Oh, it is, and that's one of the things I watch. My granddaughter has limited technology. In the last few minutes that we have, I want to ask a question about, so we have attachment, but can you actually also go the other way and be actually addicted to spending time with someone?
In a way, sure. You can become addicted to a person, but what you're really addicted to is the feeling of maybe intensity around the relationship. So that's the high. So where it would be unhealthy would be if you don't feel like you have a sense of purpose, you're not doing other things, you don't get a lot from multiple relationships. Like you could have a family member you're close with, a friend you're close with, and other people. If you're relying on one person for the sole source of your support and validation, and then when you're with them, usually there's a component, like often a sexual component to it as well, that's very intense. And that when you're away, it's like you're in withdrawal. Then yes, it could develop. You could have an addictive quality to that type of relationship, and those are not healthy either. So yes, people want to be careful about that. If they feel horrible when they're not with that person, and they only feel good if they're getting constant validation and contact with that person, that it is possibly an addictive relationship, or it's just a very unhealthy relationship.
Well, I'll raise my hand, been there too. So I think our conversation is going to resonate with so many women, not just the last section, but all of it, because I think when we hear back from an expert like you, but also from other women's experiences, they're like, okay, it's time, maybe I need to look at this. And that was my hope with this conversation, is that someone will start looking at their relationship story and asking themselves if it's healthy. So I want to share, I'd love for you to tell a little bit about your book in the last few moments that we have. It's called Ghosted and Breadcrumbed. And when I got it, I was like, I just love that title.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about it, Dr. Marnie.
Sure. Well, I was, when you name a book, you want it to be catchy. You want people to look at it and go, huh, what's this about? And hopefully they'll pick it up and read the back and it will resonate with them, or they'll realize that they need the book. And I was trying to think of words to describe negative dating trends. And I remember the word ghosted. And that's just when somebody who has shown you romantic interest, maybe you've had a date or two, or maybe even been seeing them for a little while, but then they just disappear and they cut off all communication. And that leaves you very perplexed. It does create a lot of anxiety and uncertainty, and you don't know what's going on. And it's a really awful experience for people. And so that word ghosted, I see a lot of different places now even. It's being used in other realms, not just relationships, but workplace and things like that. So I'm seeing it pop up more and more. And then breadcrumbed is just another one of those types of terms as well, which is like stringing someone along. So you're just throwing them little breadcrumbs to keep them in the game, keep them involved, but you really don't have any intention of fully engaging in the relationship or fully committing to the person. And there's several others, but I thought, this might be a catchy title, and it was fitting for the situation. But certainly, these relationships are, or when these things happen, they're very painful, and they really feel awful for people. And I wanted to write a book that would really help people have very positive experiences and feel more empowered that they're taking charge of their dating life or their romantic life, and that they're having better experiences and they're not putting up with bad ones, and they're figuring out ways to really assert themselves and also be aware if they're stuck in patterns that are really, they're not helping them.
I am excited to be sharing an excerpt of your book in the upcoming issue of Aspire magazine, so thank you for
Great.
That. Yeah, and I just think, you know, the message you're sharing and the expertise you're bringing to the table gets us talking, gets us thinking outside the box that we might be living in our relationship. So I want to thank you for that. And I want to invite everyone to learn more about the work Dr. Marnie's doing by going to drmarnieonline.com. And again, her book is Ghosted and Breadcrumbed: Stop Falling for Unavailable Men and Get Smart About Healthy Relationships. Dr. Marnie, I want to thank you for being here and, as I shared, for bringing this conversation out.
Oh, you're welcome. I love talking about this topic, so I really appreciate you having me on.
And everyone, I hope to see you every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time for the Inspired Conversations radio show. Until next time, choose love, choose joy, choose happiness, my friends.
Thanks for listening to Inspired Conversations with publisher Linda Joy. Join our sacred space every Tuesday at 2 p.m. Eastern and meet leading female visionaries, empowering authors, heart-centered female entrepreneurs, coaches, and healers. Inspired Conversations with Linda Joy is a soulful venue where guests share the obstacles they've overcome, along with wisdom and lessons learned on their personal journey that led them to the transformational work they do in the world. Inspired Conversations to empower you on your path to authentic and soulful living.